The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. How do we think of the Buddha's truth? How can we make the Buddha's truth one with ourselves? I ask myself that from time to time. I have made this vow. How do I make the Buddha's truth one with myself? We can think of the Buddha's truth as enlightenment. It's as simple as that. And when we come across the word enlightenment, what comes to mind? What comes to your mind? Well, what comes to my mind is that indeed the Buddha's truth, truth with a capital T, is enlightenment. So, if I wish to make the Buddha's truth one with myself, and it stands to reason, doesn't it, that I need to make enlightenment one with myself. Now, Dogen, in his early years, asked the question, if we are already enlightened, then why do we practice? And the answer he found, as most of you will know, after many years, was that we practice because we are enlightened. And later on, in writing about actualizing enlightenment, he wrote, practice and enlightenment are one. Enlightenment isn't something outside ourselves. It isn't a great experience that we aim to have. And then when that's done, well, thank goodness, now I can get on with my life. That's not enlightenment. Enlightenment is everyday practice. It's realizing the Buddha nature within. It's realizing our compassionate heart. It's realizing that we and all beings are enlightened, even though chances are we and they, us and them, do not always act enlightenment. Reverend Master Jiu talks about knowing the truth within yourself, truth with a capital T, knowing the truth within yourself. And that's why we're all here, isn't it? That's why I live here as a monk. That's why you come here as a lay sangha to do retreats, to have some still time to look at those things within yourself that perhaps in your daily life, in the world, the multiple distractions of simply living in the world keep you from looking at. So, what does being enlightened mean for us in our daily practice? If enlightenment and practice are one, then we need to ask ourselves, what is my practice? For many of us, it can come down to two very simple words, precepts and meditation, because the precepts encompass all of our daily life. Our daily life encompasses the precepts. And meditation allows us the stillness, the non-distractedness to look at where in our life are the precepts, where is my life, where is my daily life lacking the precepts? Reverend Master Sekhai talked about the paramitas of generosity and patience. We need all of the paramitas to practice the precepts. We need an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, that suffering exists, that it exists because of our attachments, and that the way to let go of those attachments are the guidelines of the Eightfold Noble Path. So I used to think of all these things as linear lists. I like being tidy and organized, and I like lists, and it all fitted out very well. Except that as I go on in my practice, I realize that these lists, if you wish to call them this, the Eightfold Path, Six Paramitas, Four Noble Truths, Four Wisdoms, they're not lists, they're a circle. They're a circle that encompasses our life and that we are right in the middle of. We are in this middle of the Buddha's truth. And it's up to us to find ways to take the Buddha's truth that surrounds us and open up that circle to include all beings, those we know, those we don't know, those we like, those we don't like, those with whom we cannot understand how they can commit such egregious acts. We offer them the Buddha's truth. So, how do we offer that? Well, we offer it by being the precepts. We offer it by being the Four Noble Truths, by being the Four Wisdoms. Great Master Dogen talks about the Four Wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy, as being the signs of enlightenment. So it seems reasonable to me that we need to be the Four Wisdoms, just as we need to be the precepts. Why is it important to do this? Why is it important to be the Four Wisdoms? Because this is what we offer to all beings. This is what we make of our daily life. Reverend Master Dai Sui, in writing of the Four Wisdoms, speaks of benevolence leading the entire world toward enlightenment. Very slowly, very gently. We don't know the effects of our practice. We don't know the effects of when we're angry and when we smile. But I can assure you that the effects of an angry scowl or a beneficent smile will change the world. So, if we're going to be the precepts, if we're going to be the Four Wisdoms, it's pretty simple, really. All we need to do, all this necessitates, is our letting go of the self. So here we are back at the beginning, aren't we? Dropping off body and mind is the way that it's often referred to, quoting Dogen's teaching, letting go of everything. for my own self, I have found that that is literally true. To let go of the self, for me, means to let go of everything. Reverend Master Jiyu writes, when we recognize the purity of the Buddha nature surrounding us, we begin to see things differently. And when we let go of the self, we begin to see things differently. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be verified by all things. To be verified by all things is to let the body and mind of the self and the body and mind of others drop off. There is a trace of realization that cannot be grasped. We endlessly express this ungraspable trace of realization. We express this ungraspable trace of realization in our everyday life. Reverend Master Jiyu says in Roar 2, in Roar of the Tigris, Volume 2, this shows the importance of humility to drop off our body and mind, to drop off ourself. She continues, to know the truth within yourself from seeing it, capital IT, within all things, that is enlightenment. To know, and that's the end of the quote, to see the Buddha nature within all things, to see the Buddha nature within ourselves, that is enlightenment. And she further points out in a paragraph that I would like to read to you. This is from Roar of the Tigris, Volume 1. But before I read that, let me say what she's talking about is when we're able to see the Buddha nature in all things, in all people, in all situations, and in all circumstances. So she writes, and when you realize the true extent of this purity and stillness, you realize your position in the scheme of things, and you know the fullness of the unborn. You see, quotes, the world as if through an ever-changing kaleidoscope that can see the Buddha in everything. This is what is meant by the line in our morning service scriptures which say, the wooden figure sings and the stone maiden dances. And the fence posts sing and dance. They all glorify the eternal. To be able to see Buddha nature in all things, to be able to see the spirit in all things, for it exists in all things, this is what is meant by enlightenment. One of the glimpses that I had very early on of enlightenment was the everyday life of Reverend Master Jiyu. And I certainly didn't know it at the time. She seemed, quite frankly, a very ordinary human being to me. I watched her sit still in the midst of sometimes very grave conditions, sometimes very funny conditions, but a myriad host of conditions. Her deteriorating health, months getting up to one thing and another. We are human, after all. And I watched her and I learned from her. Most of the learning has come within the past few years. And she passed on more than 20 years ago. But here are a few of the things that I have found helpful in my ongoing quest to be a little bit like Reverend Master Jiyu, to be able to sit still in the midst of conditions and to have an enlightened perspective on other beings and on an enlightened perspective on the circumstances in which I find myself. So here's a few of the things that seem to me to be helpful in my own quest for letting go of the self, for dropping off body and mind, if that is not too pretentious a statement. Preferences. Number one are preferences. I have become aware recently, much to my chagrin, of all the preferences I have. And the question, when we're able to sit still and look at our preferences, the question I ask myself is, do I want to continue this, whatever it is? I mean, we all have preferences. There's nothing inherently wrong in that. The problem is when we cling to those preferences and we allow those preferences to come between ourself and our concern for others and our wish to do no harm for others. Opinions. Are opinions different than preferences? Well, yes, they are for me. My opinions are quite firmly held. For the most part, they're correct, as opposed to someone else's opinion. Whereas with preferences, I can say, well, I can let this go. Opinions are harder to let go, and it's worth the struggle. It's worth the struggle to look at, why do I think this way? Why am I looking at something from this point of view? So looking at what our opinions are and asking ourselves, is this helpful in my everyday training of keeping the precepts? Or is this not helpful? And if it's not helpful, then let us start letting it go. Along with opinions, I think, come habits of thought and speech. I think habits of thought are quite ingrained. Habits of speech may be even more so. And the words we use, which can be from many, many, many years ago, and we still use the same words. I'm reminded of a wonderful comment by Reverend Master Khotun when he said, we were having a conversation and he said, I know that's a silly thing for me to have done. And I thought, gosh, the word silly doesn't seem to go with this 6-foot-tall Zen master. I don't think of him as silly. And he must have noticed my perplexed look. And he said, well, you know, Scholastic, I used to say, boy, that was a stupid thing to do. But he said, I changed my mind. I don't want to call myself stupid anymore. I don't want to call myself or anyone else. So I use the word silly. Seemed reasonable to me. And certainly, silly is a much more benign word than stupid. So I would ask you, how many times do you call yourself stupid or berate yourself for something you've done, probably in words that you wouldn't use for someone else? So let us look at our habits of thought and speech and see if we can do a little better, and see if our habits of thought and speech are in accord with the precepts. The precept about not speaking against others applies to ourself. We do not wish to speak against ourselves, but how often do we do that? Another reminder that's been helpful to me in my ongoing quest to let go of this sticky, persnickety, insistent self is how much I value comfort. I don't really want to be discomfort. I'm willing to have a little physical pain after hip replacement, but other than that, I want to be comfortable. But being comfortable means often that I'm not willing to look at those things that cause me discomfort. So I've begun to look at comfort in two ways, physical comfort and mental comfort. And I ask myself, how much is my quest, my demand, my preference for physical comfort, how much is that constricting my life? And I ask myself about the mental comfort, how much is my insistence on being comfortable preventing me from seeing the distressing and uncomfortable karma that's trying to get my attention? From my own experience, allowing karma to arise and saying, yes, thank you, what can I learn here, is not a comfortable procedure. And the more I insist on comfort, the less I'm going to be able to learn and recognize and welcome that karma that arises. So, if it's the case that there's a little bit of your life in which you can find preferences and opinions and habits of thought and speech and inclinations towards comfort, then what are the antidotes to these? What can we do to help ourselves in this regard? In no particular order, these are some things that I have found that help. One is non-complaining. I find that I have a habit of saying, if something strikes me as, in my own daily life, as not, it's as kind of being askew with what I think should be done, I say, oh, that's kind of a difficult person, or oh, that's kind of a difficult situation. But what I've learned to do, this may seem pretty simplistic, but what I've learned to do is say, oh, that's interesting. Because once again, interesting, when I use the word interesting, it brings up a different emotion and a different feeling for me than if I say, that's difficult. Interesting. The word interesting for me opens, and the word difficult for me closes down. And I never think of myself, of course, as a complaining person. But to me, I complain a lot, and I've decided I don't want to do this anymore. Reverend Master Chiyu couples non-complaining with all acceptance. Non-complaining, all acceptance. And all acceptance, for me, I often think of it with the one sentence, all is one and all is different. And when I can remember that all is different and all is one, I'm able to make a little bit of progress in the non-complaining and the all-accepting. Gratitude. I think that of all the antidotes to all my illnesses, gratitude is the one. If I had to just choose one, I would choose gratitude. There's a wonderful book called, by Oliver Sacks, the late Oliver Sacks, called Gratitude. And in it, he makes some wonderful suggestions. And one of the suggestions is keeping a gratitude journal. And I have found for myself, because I've kept a diary as a child, that's what all girls did back then, and I've kept a journal on and off, and I started trying, when I write at night, to think of at least one thing that I can be grateful for, and I write it down. The other thing, and I got this idea from somewhere, I don't remember where, is that when I wake up in the morning, I put my hands in gassho, and I say the three homages, and I say, thank you. And I've incorporated that into waking up at night and being in pain or distress or whatever, as I think as we age often happens. And I can find myself saying, you know, I have a bed to sleep in. Thank you. I have a room of my own. Thank you. I have a flush toilet and running water right next door to me. Because the more we read and the more we hear and the more we see of what is going on in the outside world, I think I am safe in saying that all of us lead a very comfortable, if not indulgent, life. I think on a par with gratitude comes bowing. I'm sure you've heard the Buddhist teaching, when bowing, as long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. And we bow every morning. Some of us get down on the floor, some of us kneel, some of us stand up. It doesn't matter. What matters is our attitude of mind and our sense of offering our respect and gratitude to the teaching and to the situation that we're in. The other thing that has been very helpful to me in looking at how to practice enlightenment in my daily life are the numerous short verses that we have in our tradition. And I have come to think of these as verses of enlightenment. The one we started out with is a perfect example. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. If you said nothing else in the morning and you said that, and you repeated it during the day, that's a sign of enlightenment. When we recite our Kesa verse, how great and wondrous are the clothes of enlightenment, formless, yet embracing every treasure. I wish to unfold the Buddha's teaching that I may help all living things. When we do our mealtime verse, we will eat lest we become lean and die. We accept this food so that we may become enlightened. We have a toothbrushing verse. I take the toothbrush that all living things may profit. May they understand the truth quickly and become naturally pure. We have a bathing verse. I must cleanse my body and my heart. I pray that I may cleanse my heart, and I like to add, for the benefit of all beings. There are many ways that we can incorporate the practice of enlightenment in our daily life. So in closing, I would ask you this question. How much effort do you wish to put into actualizing enlightenment in your daily life? Because it's up to us, isn't it? It's up to me for my life. It's up to you for your life. To each one of us individually, to actualize enlightenment in our daily life, because right now, this moment, is all we have. When we die, we're going to die alone. And that's regardless of how many people, beings, or machines are surrounding us on our deathbed. We don't know when we're going to die, we don't know where we're going to die, and we don't know how we're going to die. So it seems to me that it behooves us to make a daily effort as though our hair were on fire. On the day my own teacher died, Rinpoche Master Jiyu, she followed her regular morning schedule. And for a couple of years before she died, she was not able to walk. So the part of the daily routine was that in the afternoon, she would go from her den to the lounge, and she would call it her transfer, and we would move her from her chair into a wheelchair and take her over into her lounge and help her do the transfer from the wheelchair to the lounge chair. But that afternoon, 6th of November, 2006, about 2 p.m., she transferred a little bit early and with her monks. And the monks that were with her sort of, you know, did their usual thing, massaged her feet and read to her. And I received a call about 2 o'clock that afternoon, asking me to come down to her house. And I did so, obviously, at once. And I found her unresponsive. Her heart rate was low. Her breathing was shallow. So I went into the study to telephone to her physician, Dr. Jim Parker, here in Mount Shasta. And while speaking with him, her Master Daiswi came in to say that she had passed. I thought later that she passed on the way she lived, just leading her ordinary daily life. May we all be so blessed. May we all be so blessed. Shohaku Okamura writes of his own master's death, Kosho Yoshiyama Roshi. He writes, every day he tried to express his dharma slightly better than the day before. And the day he died, at age 86, he wrote this poem in his diary. And the title was, Just Bow. Putting my right and left hands together as one, I just bow. I just bow to become one with Buddha and God. Just bow to become one with everything I encounter. Just bow to become one with all the myriad things. Just bow as life becomes life. I watched Reverend Master Jiyu bow to all the things that came to her. May we all follow her example. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.